It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee. And on the line
is Jennifer Aiken.
So for those of you who are loyal and longtime listeners, Jennifer is the elder care attorney that was on our show last year. And about this time into the show, it wasn't much more than this, the entire Comcast telephone system for the neighborhood that includes the radio station went down, and it was down for the whole hour. So we got to talk, but nobody got to ask her a question. So we got today, and we're taking our second chance today, and you can actually get a hold of an attorney today just by picking up the phone and calling us at 904-222-8255. Now, I'm going to follow the usual format, and I'll give the market wrap during the first quarter of the show. And after the break, I'll introduce Jennifer formally and all the areas of law that she practices in, and then you can all get your questions lined up and talk. First things first, we are a show about money, so we have to do that part. So I appreciate it. And Jennifer, just hold tight. We'll be with you very shortly. All right, for the first-time listeners, you probably don't know that sometimes people do come in by telephone, sometimes in the studio. I am always here, of course, because I'm just one of those. And it will be a lot of fun, and it will be very informative. I always promise you will learn something, so try to stick around for the whole hour, and you'll take something with you that matters. Now, another thing I wanted to bring up before we get into the second quarter, our show with Jennifer last year was the second most downloaded podcast of the year. We podcast our shows, as you know, after the fact on our website, VanWeeFinancial.com. And people wrote in afterwards. They had questions galore, but as I said, there was no telephone system, so nobody got to ask their questions. The thing that stuck out more than any other single thing to me was the whole part about my mother, father, whatever, is getting to the point where we know that there is a home in the future, and I'm concerned that we have to bleed all of the assets out of the estate before we can get this done, because we don't have enough to finance it for years in our pocket. And Jennifer's the first person that ever told me, and ever told a lot of you folks, that is just categorically untrue in the state of Florida. And I'm going to ask her that as our first question after the break. Why do we all have the misimpression that we all have? And what do you do about it, and how do you do it? So I've got you on alert now for that. Meanwhile, in the market this week, it was an up week, which we needed badly because the market opened up very poorly, as you all know, right after the first, end of the year in a bang, and then it woke up in the first of the year in a bad mood and didn't get any better for several days. Well, now we're kind of hanging right on the edge. Got the broad index up a little bit, 0.3, and the other two, S&P and the QQQ, they're down just about that much. So basically, we're back up to where we started, and frankly, it's looking pretty reasonable out there. Not everything is good. In fact, if you want to go through a list of all the trouble in the world, you better have time to make a long one because it's there. But like Adam likes to point out, the market climbs a wall of worry, and as I like to say, it's like shingles. It doesn't care. So you can be running a war from a hospital bed, Puerto Rico, and an ice cream parlor, and the market doesn't care. I care, but the market doesn't. So we've got that going on. We've got wars in other places going on. We've got some real troubling economics, meaning the price level of goods. Yes, the inflation level is down. I'll get to that in a minute. But the price level of goods is astronomical compared to what it was at the inauguration of the Biden administration. And that part does not change. And in fact, it gets dangerous if we want that part to change, as there's a fine line between disinflation and deflation. When things start to deflate, the economy can go straight to hell in a handbasket. We don't really want that. We do want the slowing, and yes, there will be prices that come down, particularly in the commodities arena. We would love to see the commodity prices fall even further than they are now, and frankly, that's exactly what's going on. So this week we got inflation data, and the retail level comes out first, and that number disappointed all those brilliant analysts who never get anything right. It was up a tenth more than they wanted it to, and of course we had a negative reaction to that before it finally got back on a better keel that day. But then the wholesale number came in, the PPI instead of the CPI, and it came in actually down. It was projected to be up one-tenth. It was down one-tenth. The market liked that a lot better. They're still confused, and they're still not overly bullish, but at least that one kind of took the edge off of what was going on in the market and allowed us to move forward again. Now, I don't know how accurate any of these things are. Nobody does. I tend to not trust these things very much at all, but the market does, and big investors do. And at this point, I say, let's just take good news and call it good news, because I can't think of a smarter way to do it right now. So there are places in the world not doing well, like China and Hong Kong. And for those of you who are real news watchers, you might have heard this morning that the election in Taiwan is over now. And they elected the fellow that was the vice president, and he is not a preferred person to the people on the mainland. I'm not sure what this is going to mean. It means to me that the Taiwanese people still value their freedom a lot, and I appreciate that, especially since they kind of control the semiconductor industry, and we need them. But we'll see. Just Xi is not going to sit there and take this lightly. I think we can say that for sure. So that area, in my mind, isn't exactly ripe for investment, and apparently the world feels like I do. The rest of the world, however, not quite so bad. Things are looking pretty good. A couple of real highlights. Japan, after what, 3 or 4 decades of just being sound asleep, is waking up. And I think that India is probably the recipient of a lot of the problems that are going on in China. And India seems to be booming, and they seem to be handling it pretty well. So their market is reflecting that. So if you're looking for some action in the emerging markets, we use a fund in emerging markets that does not include China. And I'm still good with that right now. I don't see any good happening there. But other places are looking pretty sharp, and I think they will stay looking pretty sharp. We'll see, I guess. But where do we go next week? I think the word for the week, the month, half year, maybe the whole year, I think the big word is going to be back to my old favorite, the V word, volatility. So don't get rattled when things happen, because things are going to happen. We might get a pullback in any or all of the indices before it starts going up again, but I think there are records in our near future. All right, we're going to take a quick break and pay some bills. We'll be right back and talk to Jennifer. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee, and on the line we have
Jennifer Aiken.
And I told you I would do a formal introduction, and I will, right after I introduce a trivia question. So our trivia question this week, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. And my question, there was an announcement this week that the number of certified financial planners in the country is quickly approaching 100,000. That means we still need a lot more. And there's a whole bunch of people doing what I do that are in my age group. And a lot of those are deciding to get out of it. I'm not one of them, but there are a lot of them. And we need a constant replenishment of people who do what we do, because we help people. And one of the things we help them with is things like estate planning, elder law, and so on. So my question today is, what percentage of young people who are currently working in financial services started out to get a job in financial services versus those who just wound up there and they're not even quite sure how or why? All right, Jennifer, as I said, is you go by just Alder Care attorney for the most part. Is that the generic
Elder law.
Okay.
When was I on the show last time?
I want to say it was July, but I'm not 100% sure of that.
Okay.
Several months.
Because I think I found out in May. I'm board certified in elder law, and I wasn't sure if I was.
It was either happening right as we were doing that show or right afterwards. And I talked to you once afterwards. It might have just happened. What is the significance of being board certified?
So just so everybody is aware, elder law is an area of law that we're not necessarily doing like nursing homes or anything like that. It's more of, you know, like the estate planning and helping families plan when they need to go into long-term care and preserving assets. And like you had mentioned before, making sure that you don't spend down on long-term care. What board certification is you go through a series of evaluations through the Florida Bar for professionalism and expertise in a particular area. And my area, obviously, is elder law. And it means I can officially say I'm an expert in this area. And there's only 117 of us in the whole state of Florida.
Wow. And there's a lot of older people. All right, we have a caller. I'd say let's just get right into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Good morning, Frank.
Oh, yes. Hi. Hi, ma'am. I don't know if I should be calling you as the right person. I'm 79 years old. I had an air conditioner installed a year ago in November. And, you know, it was loan free, interest free, and you had to pay up when the loan was over. It was over on November 16th. I totally forgot about it. My friend said, hey, you know, in December around Christmas money. And I sent in, I was waiting for a bill. And they finally sent me an email in December, and I sent the total $11,700. Now they're calling me, telling me I owe $2,000 because I didn't pay on 11/16. And I'm saying, I never got a bill. Who did I pay to? So I consider that a predatory loan, and they scoffed at that idea.
It's an interesting concept.
Reported to your credit?
I had a discussion with a young lady the other day, and I told her, I think this is a ripoff and crazy. I said, I paid the whole thing. I said, I was waiting. I forgot, but then when she told me, I waited for a bill. I said, who am I supposed to pay to without a bill? And as soon as I got your email in December, I paid the total amount, $11,700-something. And then they're telling me now, because I didn't pay exactly, and it was up to me to remember or to do it and just kind of reach out to this outfit out in Portland, Oregon, called Good Leap, and they consider it a loan. I said, it was never a loan. When the man installed it, he told me they would contact me and tell me when to pay it. And I said, okay.
I don't think elder law is what we're talking about here, despite your age.
Right. Figured.
But it's probably more, not necessarily an injury attorney, but someone who deals in the civil arena.
Yeah. I'm going to call the state about it on Tuesday and say, I think this is crazy. I mean, I'm not going to mention an air conditioner company. They're a big name, and I think they know what's going on. This is a...
Yeah,
they hope you forget for a couple of days, and then they bang you for over $2,000. I said, what?
What department, Jennifer? You got an opinion on?
Consumer Protection, Attorney General, maybe.
Okay.
Right.
If you need the name, I mean, I'm happy to offline provide you with some names of lawyers who I know could help with this sort of situation.
I appreciate that.
Okay, tell you what. I'll put you on hold, and Tom will pick up, and he'll take your name and number and email address if you can, and I'll send it to Jennifer after the show, and she can send you some recommendations.
That's very nice of you folks. I really appreciate your effort. Thank you very much.
Well, that's what we're here for, and we appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Good fighters. Thank you, sir.
All right. Take care. I'll put you on hold right now.
Thank you. Go get them.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. I don't know if I'd call it elder abuse or just a major ripoff of some sort.
Well, we're seeing more and more, anyone over the age of 65 can be considered a vulnerable adult. And, you know, a lot of people can have diminished capacity. And things. We're seeing a lot of exploitation coming through our office lately. Just even family members, businesses, just taking advantage of you know, older people in trying to, you know, take their money.
Well, the national stats that I've been reading the last couple of years are that elder fraud and abuse take a couple billion dollars a year from older people. And I have told people on the radio and off for many decades now that if there's anything that bugs me more than any other single thing, it's very simple. It's people who try to rip off elderly people.
And yeah, I've been in court all week for people doing that. So yep. It really makes me angry to watch. And it's not just, you know, there's businesses that do it. There's these, you know, people overseas that are doing it. You know, they're pretending to be other people and they're not. And then there's just family members. And that makes me so mad.
Well, I read all about those too. And it seems to be, you know, it brings out the worst in people's character when they see a person that they feel like might not be as sharp as they used to be. And therefore you're going to try to horn in and get some of your inheritance early or get somebody else's inheritance early or something like that. So it's hardly
a surprise. So what about even like caretakers, you know, like people that have been hired to come in the home to help care for your loved one, and all of a sudden they're being isolated from their family, their money's gone. It happens all like every day.
Yeah, we had an incident like that many years ago. My wife's mother, who had a woman come in on the weekends, and every Monday it seemed my mother-in-law was out of cash, and that was more than just a coincidence. Every time this woman came in, she pilfered all the money, and it took us a while, and we did figure it out, but the money was gone, of course, and pretty soon so was she. But it's the kind of thing that does happen, and it's very hard to keep your eye on. Yeah, I've got six areas here that I thought would be subject for people to talk about, and I thought I'd give them out before the next break. So that people understand the vast area of things that you can do to help. The elder law is the general one. Medicaid planning. Veterans planning. This one, I was reading through your website this morning, and I didn't realize that that was kind of a specialty area. Now, we got a lot of veterans around here. And I'd like you to talk a little about that after the break. That's a specialty that I had never considered. Then there are special needs, and that can be for the older people or the younger people or the disabled people. Then there's just the general probate and trusts, in other words, estate planning, and that can be for the healthy, normal people all over. And in fact, we recommend it highly, of course, and we assist in it, but we don't do it. And then there's the elder abuse, which we've been talking about in the early minutes here. So if anybody has any questions they want to ask Jennifer about any of those areas, and, of course, anything financial, because overall this is a call-in financial show, just pick up the phone. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. And we'll repeat the trivia question also. But we've got about a minute before the next break, so I'll ask Jennifer, what's probably the number one question you get out of all the random phone calls that might come into your firm? What's the number one thing that people call about?
The number one thing people call about, and for my firm, is, am I going to lose my house if I go on Medicaid?
Okay. And then I think when we come back, I can assure you from the time I've spent talking with you, that question is answerable, and you will probably like the answer that you hear. Am I reasonable there?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. There's no reason to listen to people who tell you they're going to take it from you, and you don't need all kinds of fancy services or anything, but you better darn well know what you're doing and be represented by someone who is capable, and that's where this comes in. All right, I've got just a few seconds left before the break, so when we come back in, I'm going to ask the question, why or how, I guess is a better one, how is it that while so many people believe you could lose your house, it's not really true, and then, of course, that opens the door to what are we going to do about it? And can you do it in advance, or can you do it only after you're worried? All those things are right up your alley, and we'll get to them in a couple of minutes. Take a short break. Be right back. This is the Van Lee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Lee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Lee.
And I'm Jennifer Aiken.
All right. We're going to repeat the trivia question and the telephone number. Lines are open, 904-222-8255. The trivia question, if you're calling about that, what percentage of young people currently working in financial services actually started out to get a job in financial services? And the rest of them got there somehow, but not on purpose. And the question for Jenna, first off, I told you I was going to give you a chance to really introduce yourself. How do people get hold of you?
We can call my office directly, 904-320-0011, or you can email me at Jennifer@jaikin, A-K-I-N, law.com.
Just as simple as it sounds, A-K-I-N. Good. All right, so the big question. I need an attorney because I'm afraid I'm going to lose my house. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're so wrong.
Good.
So it's funny. A lot of times people think, and I think this is because when people walk into nursing homes or any type of assisted living, you know, the first thing they hear is, well, you can go on Medicaid, but you have to get rid of all your assets first. Or Medicaid will take your home. Medicaid doesn't take anything. It's a benefit you apply for, and you're either approved or denied. And in Florida, you know, if somebody wants to obtain the Medicaid benefit, they can only have, for long-term care, they can only have $2,000 in assets. And people think, oh, my God, that's like nothing, and it is. But that's what's called countable assets. So something like your home, someone is allowed to own one property. So if your home doesn't count towards that $2,000 asset limit. And unlike other states, in Florida, even if you go on Medicaid and you pass away, Medicaid doesn't come back and try to take your home. So it's a protected asset. And I think people get really scared because they hear that. So they don't even want to call an elder law lawyer or try to move forward. Instead, people aren't calling because they think they're going to lose their home, and it's just not true.
And even afterwards,
what
about a married couple? One is going in, the other one is living in the house and just carries on as is if the one in the home passes away?
Correct. So they never put a lien on the home. There's the homestead protection. So for example, in New York State, which I'm also barred in, so I can sort of speak to this. If someone goes on Medicaid and they haven't done any planning, when they pass, the spouse can continue to reside in the home. However, Medicaid does put a lien on the home for how much they've paid in for their other spouse's care. But that does not happen in Florida. Oh. And in Florida, if your spouse goes into the nursing home and there's a well spouse still living at home, that spouse can keep what's called $150,000 of countable assets, so cash and things like that. So they're not left with nothing.
Okay. And I'm thinking the term countable assets, everybody knows about the look back period. If you look forward and say, the closest to home was the spouse, but it can be your mother, father, whatever. This is going to have to happen. And this $2,000 limit, if I give away everything and then apply, they're not going to like that. Because
no,
if you do
not
it within
5 years.
Okay, there's five now. And what do you do about that if you're a married couple?
So married couples are, and this is the Medicaid rules, are allowed to transfer assets back and forth to each other with no penalty. So that means they're not subject to the five-year look back. The typical planning when we have spouses is the spouse going into the nursing home or needing care transfers their assets to the well spouse. Are you following me?
Yep.
So that's allowed. And there's also, you know, you're allowed to make transfers within the five-year look back to disabled children, minor children. So there's exceptions to that transfer rule of within the 5-year look back. I mean, but spouses especially, that's a great planning technique. And I think a lot of times people get scared because they think, oh, my husband or wife, they have to go to this nursing home and now I'm not going to have anything. And that's not true. But I've had nursing homes tell clients that. And they're scared and they're using their IRAs, which another non-countable asset, Steve, if it's in required mandatory distribution status. So you don't have to use your IRA to spend down. It's counted as income what you receive every year for your required mandatory distribution, but you don't have to cash that out. So
are there income limits?
Yeah, so the income limit right now for Medicaid is about $2,800 a month. However, if someone's over that, there are special types of trust we can use that allow someone to remain eligible and their income filter through these trusts and out for their care. It's called qualified income trust or a pooled trust.
Qualified income trust?
Mm-hmm.
It's a new
one. We call it a QIT in our office.
Just quit, huh?
Yeah, quit.
I love it. Okay, and yep. And the spouse, the living spouse, can continue to live a normal life, it sounds like.
Yeah, so the spouse, they don't actually have an income limit. It's just the spouse in the nursing home. And if a spouse, if their income is under $2,300, there's ways to divert income from the spouse in the nursing home to the spouse, well spouse. So they don't leave you with no income as well. And depending on expenses, there's also ways for me to get all of the income from the spouse in the nursing home. There's just different techniques I use.
I'm sure that's news to a lot of people and probably welcome news to a whole bunch of people. But let's say it's your parent or somebody like that.
Social Security or his pension. Yeah. So there's just, go ahead.
How do you spend down, or how much do you have to spend down? For instance, if you only have one living parent and that parent is destined for the home, how do you plan for that? That's a better question.
So when we sit down and talk with clients, we go through their assets or their loved one's assets to see what is countable and what's not countable. Is there a home? They're allowed to have a car. We look at IRAs, 401ks, those types of things. Are they in that required mandatory distribution status? How much cash, stocks, mutual funds, brokerage accounts, kind of things they have to see what we need to plan with. Now, if this is a crisis situation, our loved one needs long-term care tomorrow, there's different planning techniques that I can utilize to make someone immediately eligible for Medicaid without having to spend down all their money. So one thing we've done is you can purchase rental-producing property. So if you have a piece of property and it's rented out, it doesn't count, just the income. There is a company in Ocala. This is a really neat concept. I'm not sure if we talked about this last time, but they own like 50 properties. And what I do is when I'm doing my planning, let's say I have $100,000 extra, like I don't want to spend on the nursing home, but I want to preserve. They will take that $100,000 and invest it in one of their rental producing properties. You'll get an actual deed, a rental agreement, everything, and you get a payment every month for your loved one. However, when your loved one passes, depending on how long you've been in this contract, you can end up getting all of your money back. It's really neat. And there's just different techniques like that the elder law lawyers use to help preserve the funds. And everybody's plan is different because no two people are the same that sit down in my office, but a lot of the techniques, I just come up with a plan and I go through the options. We've had people purchase another vehicle. So there's just different things. Transfer to a disabled child. If a child has moved into the home and lived there for 2 years with mom or dad to help care for them, they can transfer the home to that child without penalty.
Oh. So. That, These are all, I remember a few of the things you're saying from the last time we spoke, but there's a lot of this that's what's either new because I didn't remember it or new because it's new, but it's interesting. So interesting. So what's the average age of people who call you?
You know, I get all ages because, you know, I have people that are in their late 90s, early 100s, but we've seen a lot of early onset dementia lately and Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're looking at early 70s, like young people, around 78, 79, who now are needing care. And it's, to me, those are young. That's a young age because people are living longer and not necessarily better.
We have had some personal experience with it, not exactly early, but I consider when Alzheimer's happens in your 70s early. And we've had some very recent experience with that, and it's scary. I know for getting into a lot of places, if you are headed for a particular home of some sort, whether there's several, many, many of them around, you have to get lined up before you're too bad or they won't take you, especially if it's perpetual care and includes a memory department. And that, to me, would encourage people to get this discussed earlier rather than later. Agreed with that?
Proactive planning. Yeah, proactive planning. Don't wait for a crisis.
Yeah, and if you just go in and do a normal estate plan, like people drafting wills and living trust and that kind of thing, if you didn't talk about that toward the end of life stuff when you set all this up, it might be worth a relook.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about veterans benefits right after a quick break, and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Jennifer Aiken.
And we have been talking to Jennifer. She's an elder law specialist, and I told her earlier in the show that something I didn't know until I was perusing her website was that there is an area of the type of law that she practices that is devoted to veterans and their benefits. And you know, if you've been around this area very long, we have a huge percentage of veterans that live in this area. And I would imagine that this is probably a growing area of the practice, but rather than speak for you, am I right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of veterans don't know, but that there's, you know, a benefit out there that can help pay for care in the home or assisted living or memory care. And they can use it with Medicaid. So there's, it's called aid and attendance.
Aid and attendance?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Yeah, that one's good for me to know. So anybody who is, you know, a lot of benefits are a lot of veterans now are getting older, and a lot of them are infirm, not working, probably living on fixed incomes, getting the most out of what they deserve for what they've done can't be that easy.
It's not. I mean, it's really not this, and then they don't know. A lot of vets really come to my office, and we'll talk about when they served, and I ask questions, even if we're just doing estate planning. And because I think it's important for veterans to know that there is this benefit out there called aid and attendance, that, you know, there's certain eligibility dates, wartime periods that they have to observe, they have to be honorably discharged. And then they, you know, needing some help with activities of daily living, eating, bathing, transferring, walking, just some type of help they may need, or if they're blind, they can be eligible to get, you know, this benefit. And it's a monthly benefit. There's the benefit for married veterans is around $2,600 a month. A veteran not married, it's $2,200, and then there's even a benefit for spouses of a veteran that passed away. It's about $1,400 a month. Wow. So.
And what's the process of getting involved with that? Is it best to go through you, or is there a website they can just go to and start asking questions, or what's the story?
Yeah, they can go through me. I'm accredited with the VA, and I sit down. There is an asset limit. about $150,000. It's a little bit different than Medicaid, though, because unlike Medicaid, the VA does count assets like IRAs, right? And so it's really, my thought is, if you're a veteran and you may need care, you know, you make sure that you're sitting down with an elder law lawyer that understands Medicaid and VA, because even though they both provide funds to help pay for care, one is federally mandated, the other is state mandated, and they don't speak to each other. And more often than not, you are coming in and trying to do planning for one or the other, because like for Medicaid, there is planning that can be done to obtain this benefit before we apply for it. However, if you don't keep in mind the other benefit, you could really screw up somebody's eligibility in one or the other. Now, with the VA, their doctor has to fill out a form. There's an application process. I will say it can take anywhere from 6 to 12 months to even receive the benefit because they're so backed up. But the nice thing about aid in attendance is it does offer back pay from the date you applied. So you get a lump sum payment. So sometimes the planning involves, you know, you need this $2,600 a month. We have this much money funds. You know, we know we're going to get you through. And then we also know there's going to be a lump sum back payment.
All right. Well, I know from experience, mine and other people's, because we talk to a lot of people, one of the first questions people have when you start to bring up a topic like this is, I can't afford a lawyer. Mm-hmm. What do you say to that?
Well, if a veteran comes into our office and they really don't need any planning, anything like that, we do work with a nonprofit in the area that will assist them with the application process. And then as far as Medicaid goes, there's a local area on aging that does help families through the Medicaid process. We're lawyers. Well, I'm the only lawyer in the law firm, but we also try to, you know, help people in the community. So if we try to be resourceful, and like if they don't really have funds, like who can we send them to that we know will help them, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Adam and I do the same thing because, let's face it, not everybody needs a financial planner from just an asset standpoint, but everybody needs to know what they're doing or at least how to find the answers to their questions. So. Same here. Don't. Mm-hmm. I would encourage anyone to call if they have any questions about this. And that's why I wanted to hit a couple of different areas in your practice today. And I think it's very important that people understand how many different things are encompassed. In our work, we encompass a lot of areas, and in yours, it's the same thing. It's not just take care of my old grandmother or something like that. The other major topic is brought up in front of us many, many times is elder abuse. And I think it's a huge problem, and I want people to know how to handle it if they suspect that one of their loved ones is being subjected to elder abuse. So what can you tell us?
So I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk a little bit about that because I feel like I don't know what's going on, but we've had so many different phone calls in the past couple of months. So if you feel like you as an elderly adult or a loved one is being abused by someone, you need to call a lawyer because there is a statute. It's called the Temporary Injunction for Protection for a Vulnerable Adult, where we can file without having to notify the what we call the perpetrator or the perp. Mm-hmm. And we're able to file this type of injunction and get this temporary injunction so we can remove the vulnerable adult from their care or have this perpetrator removed from the home. More often than not, though, we're filing for what's called guardianship. Mm-hmm. And so what a guardianship is when you are telling the court that this person is no longer able to make decisions for themselves. They're vulnerable. They have some type of diminished capacity, and you're asking the court to give you guardianship, which you're taking away somebody's rights when you're getting a guardianship. Like a guardian is in charge of this person. But sometimes we have to do that because we're so worried about the exploitation that's going on that, you know, we've probably filed 9 or 10 emergency guardianships in the past 4 or 5 weeks.
Ooh. So, weeks?
Yeah. Yes. I'm not kidding. Yeah.
Oh, that's scary.
Now, it's very scary.
Who are the guardians? Do you work with professionals or could it
sometimes,
be family members?
Yeah. What? Yeah, we do use professional. There's a couple in the area that I really like. If a family member doesn't want to do it or family members are fighting about who should be the guardian, I'll recommend a third party for the time being. But a lot of times it's the children are the guardians or brothers or sisters of the vulnerable adults. It just really depends on the situation. Like I said, if people are fighting over who should be guardian, I like to defer to a third party. I think it helps the family dynamic.
What are the rights of the guardian? For instance, if the patient is in a nursing home and the people are suspecting abuse or neglect, to me, the same thing, and mm-hmm. what rights do they have to get it found out, stopped, fixed, whatever?
The guardian can move forward and get a lawyer, hire a lawyer, and call the ombudsman, which is the advocate for nursing homes. So the guardian stands in this person's shoes to, you know, move forward with the lawsuit or call Adult Protective Services. Sure.
Do you find most of your cases are people who are in homes, the people who need help? The abuse is taking place in a nursing home, or is it anywhere?
No, these are people living at home. These are people living at home that probably need to go to an assisted living or nursing home that need help, but their exploiter is keeping them home, trying to take advantage of their funds.
Ah.
Moving. Maybe transferring the home to themselves, you know, having the vulnerable adult sign a deed over to them. I mean, this happens every day. And pretending they love them, you know.
It always comes down to money, doesn't it?
It's always money.
Want to find mm-hmm. the problem, follow the money. It's as simple as it could be. Oh, man, it's scary, though. What's your impression of Florida nursing homes in general?
They're okay.
And how about the state people who help with these things?
This is what I tell people. You know, if you have put a loved one in a nursing home, you better be there and you better make sure the nursing home knows you're going to be there to check on your loved one.
Okay. Well, I feel like we're just getting started, but in reality, I've only got about 40 seconds.